Vacation with Chuck Swindoll, July 2014, on the very first Insight for Living cruise to Norway.
You know, you can hardly imagine the explosive burst of colors. The floral displays almost hurt my eyes, and I'm not overstating. Norway is truly a visual feast.
Relax, refresh, and create new memories. Cruise with Chuck Swindoll on board Holland America's elegant Rotterdam ship.
No words can adequately describe the fjords, especially the cascading waterfalls that are tumbling down from towering cliffs above. And the weather is exquisite. Warm and sunny during the day, and crisp and cool through the nights. This Texan loves Norway.
You have lots of options for taking a vacation, but there's only one Insight for Living cruise to Norway. Call 888-447-0444 or online go to insight.org/events.
What could be better? Daily time in God's Word, along with singing and laughing, enjoying God's majestic creation. Come with us to Norway and see it for yourself.
July 26th through August 2nd, 2014. Call now at 888-447-0444 or visit online insight.org/events.
The Insight for Living cruise to Norway is paid for and made possible by only those who choose to attend.
With 66 books in the Bible, some gain more attention than others. The Psalms and Proverbs, for instance, are beloved by many for their poetic wisdom. Acts is admired for the way it chronicles early church history. Romans contains deep theological precepts. But when you get toward the end of the New Testament, you have to wonder why God preserved the small one-chapter letters. Chuck Swindoll calls them postcards. Today on Insight for Living, we'll be reminded of God's divine plan to preserve this personal communique for generations to come. Chuck refers to 2 John as a postcard to a lady and her kids.
From its headwaters in northern Minnesota, the Mississippi River meanders southward all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, spawning and sustaining life along its nearly 2,400-mile journey. Think of that. To those who know it well, that river is a gentle giant, an untiring bestower of good gifts. It is a bountiful, self-replenishing storehouse of nutrients for farmland. It's a refreshing aviary for birds, a busy highway for barges. However, let it leave its boundaries and this gentle giant becomes an unwieldy, dangerous beast. More than 40 dams and about 1,600 miles of levees attempt to control the mighty tide, but there are frightening times when that river puffs up its chest and pushes over these meager defenses. The floods of 1993, for example, testify to the widespread damage that river can cause. Prime bottomland became lakes. In fact, entire towns were destroyed, and levees in 8 states were wiped out. In many ways, love is like that Mississippi River. It flows with life-giving power, but without control, without boundaries, it can do great harm. In the name of loving sinners, we can go too far, to the point that we tolerate, we accept, we even justify sin. This kind of love calmly sets others adrift in dangerous waters, rather than moving them from death to life. The little postcard named 2 John shows us how to keep love within safe boundaries by building in our lives 2 solid river banks, truth and discernment. Only 13 verses, 2 John barely fills a single sheet of papyrus. It's like a note we might write and drop in the mail to a close friend. As a personal letter, it cradles some secrets we as outsiders aren't privy to. The opening is cloaked in mystery. It reads, "The elder to the chosen lady and her children." Who is that elder? And who's the lady? What's the situation? These are some questions we will try to answer. See if you can answer them as I read these 13 verses of 2 John from the New Living Translation. Listen carefully. This letter is from John the Elder. I'm writing to the chosen lady and to her children, whom I love in the truth, as does everyone else who knows the truth, because the truth lives in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace, which come from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, will continue to be with us who live in truth and love. How happy I was to meet some of your children and find them living according to the truth, just as the Father commanded. I'm writing to remind you, dear friends, that we should love one another. This is not a new commandment, but one we have had from the beginning. Love means doing what God has commanded us, and He has commanded us to love one another, just as you heard from the beginning. I say this because many deceivers have gone out into the world. They deny that Jesus Christ came in a real body. Such a person is a deceiver and an antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose what we have worked so hard to achieve. Be diligent so that you receive your full reward. Anyone who wanders away from this teaching has no relationship with God, but anyone who remains in the teaching of Christ has a relationship with both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to your meeting and does not teach the truth about Christ, don't invite that person into your home or give any kind of encouragement. Anyone who encourages such people becomes a partner in their evil work. I have much more to say to you, but I don't want to do it with paper and ink, for I hope to visit you soon and talk with you face to face. Then our joy will be complete. Greetings from the children of your sister, chosen by God.
Listening to Insight for Living. For helpful resources to complement this new study called New Testament Postcards, go to insightworld.org. And now the message from Chuck Swindoll, a postcard to a lady and her kids.
I will never forget mail call during my boot camp days in the Marine Corps. You must remember that the only contact a boot has in the Corps with the outside world is mail. And, of course, the drill instructors know that, and therefore they work overtime to make it miserable for you to appreciate that time of hearing from home. For example, you're lined up in rank and file in a whole company, and the whole stack of mail is held by these King of Kings and Lord of Lords over you, and they look at the picture or they look at the address on the envelope and they smell it, and they turn it over and look on the back for neat little things that are written personally, which they read aloud to everyone that is there. And then they call you, and you leave rank and race around the end and run full speed down. Just before you get there, they drop it, and you can't catch it, and so you can't stop. You keep running. And by the end of the mail call, there's a whole stack of mail that has been well tromped on, which you go to and pick out your letter. And then instantly, they have an assignment for you to do until sundown. You have supper, then you go to bed. Have no time to read your mail. It's bad theology, but I think there's going to be a special judgment for drill instructors in eternity. I remember sitting under the moonlit night trying to read Cynthia's words to me and not being... If I ever wanted to read Braille, it was during those days. I could not read in the dark, but the worst kind of thing to send was a postcard. Because, right, the postcard was red aloud with such words as, "My dearest darling dumpling Charles." And for the rest of the day, you were known as Private Dearest Darling Dumpling by the whole group. I've often thought about postcards and how dumb it is to write a postcard if you don't want it read. You know that people read postcards. Between the one that wrote it and the one that got it, there are about three sets of people that read it, right? Don't look at me like that. You know that that's what happens. The people who get it at the post office certainly have a little time on their hands. And they look it over at supper time. And then when it's put in the hands of the postman and he's on his journey, has to eat lunch under a tree somewhere, he reads over the latest news to different people. And the person in your family, you've all gotten notes from people and you've had your family members walk up with a little smile and says, "Here's your postcard," you know. They've read it. It seems ironic to me that of all the pieces of correspondence in the New Testament, 21 pieces of correspondence out of 27, that the postcards are the least read. Doesn't that seem strange to you that the four one-chapter letters, the one we look at today, less than 300 words in the original, little 8x10 piece of papyrus that was probably folded over, it's so important as it succinctly states a message for the church, and yet we don't even know what they say. I thought Mark's comment between the services was insightful. He said, "It's amazing to me how contemporary this little letter from John is. I mean, it's just like this morning's message from the paper or wherever. And yet we don't really see what it says because we've not bothered to read over his shoulder. Let's do that today. Let's see exactly what he's saying in light of today because it is extremely relevant. I've given you an outline to follow that might help you as you keep your mind on what we're saying. As we do that, let's look at the introductory part, first part, where I want to answer three questions. First of all, who was the writer? Calls himself elder. And who was the recipient, who is called the chosen lady? And why did he write the card anyway? What prompted his writing this woman? See the word elder? The Greek word is presbyteros. We get presbytery or presbyterian from it. Originally, it just meant an older man, and it later came to mean a person with a high office who was usually of older age in the church. So whoever the elder was, he was older in years, and he had a high office. He oversaw some part of a local work. How did she know who it was from? You know, the only name you find in it is the name of God and His Son, Christ. But you find a lady mentioned, you find an elder mentioned, you find her sister mentioned, verse 13, and her sister's kids mentioned in 13, and her kids mentioned up in verse 1, but no names. So how'd she know who it was from? Hey, well, if you have a close friendship with someone and they drop you a note, do they have to sign it? You could tell by the handwriting who it's from. It's even drilled further into your mind if you know they've said ahead of time they're going to write you. Or you could tell by their style as to where they're coming from, by what they say, you can tell who it's from. There's no doubt it was from John. It matches in style and content with the previous letter, and the one that follows certainly was from John. By the way, he's a remarkable man. One of the men that literally rubbed sides with Christ for those 3.5 years. He wrote a gospel, the fourth letter, or the fourth book of the New Testament. And he wrote three letters. But an amazing thing happened toward the end of his life. He was banished to an Aegean island called Patmos, where he lived out his days. Most of us would have just sort of given up the ghost, pined away our last few years in self-pity. Not John. He wrote the Revelation of Christ, the last book, toward the end of the first century. Remarkable man. Who was the lady? She's called the chosen lady. Some people have sort of forced that interpretation and in an artificial manner have said that it was really a church. The lady was a church. And her children were the members of the church. You have a little trouble when you get to verse 5 and he addresses her simply as lady. And there was a word for church. He didn't use it. He just calls her lady. Refers to verse 10, her house. Verse 12, it talks about talking to her face to face, and verse 13 mentions her sister's children. You really have to force it If you make it a church, it's probably true that when normal sense makes good sense, seek no other sense. It's a good rule to follow in interpreting the Bible. In the normal, everyday, garden variety usage of the word lady, you would think of a woman. And when it mentions especially her children, you would think of a mother with her kids. So let's take it in its normal sense. Here is a man, an older officer in the church, stuck away on an island, who has a very close friend named whatever. He calls her a lady with her children. Her husband is never mentioned. Maybe he's gone. Maybe he was martyred. Maybe he died early. Maybe he's left her. It's the only letter in all the Bible addressed to a woman and her kids. Very practical word. Why do you write it? Well, it all revolves around a situation in the first century. You know, one of our problems in the 20th is that we're so far removed from the first century, we have a hard time duplicating that kind of authenticity. The church was not a building, it was a people that met in houses. Okay? The church was not a slick professional operation, it was a very simple plan, kept small by just the very nature of Christianity being under the threatening gun of Rome. And whatever powers were holding sway. There was no Bible, no book. There were separated pieces of papyrus, portions of letters, and all of some. No doubt the New Testament scriptures were beginning to be fully compiled in Ephesus, which seems to be the headquarters of that thing, but not all over. There were some copies available, no doubt, but they had no Bible bound in their language with book, chapter, and verse neatly laid out so they could... So how did they listen to God? How did God speak when they had no completed Bible? It's a good question. He spoke through men who spoke ex cathedra. In other words, there were itinerant teachers who were called prophets. They had the gift of prophecy, and they could speak without error, God's revelation concerning the new covenant. They needed to be entertained when they came. They needed to have hospitality provided. And that was the role of many of the women of the first century, to provide in their homes space for the lodging of these itinerant prophets who came through. John R.W. Stott talks about the lodging of that day. Not at all like a Holiday Inn. He says, where would Christians stay when they came to some city on business, or more important still, on a missionary journey? The comforts of the modern hotel or even the village inn were then unknown. Besides, according to Ramsay, the ancient inns were little removed from houses of ill fame. They were brothels. The profession of innkeeper was dishonorable, and their infamous character is often noted in Roman law. As a result, it was natural that Christian people on their travels would be given hospitality by members of local churches. Then he adds this: such hospitality was open to abuse. There was the false teacher on the one hand, who yet posed as a Christian. Should hospitality be extended to him? There was the more obvious fake, the false prophet with false credentials, who was dominated less by the creed he had to offer than by the material profit or the free board and lodging. Do you open your home to the false prophet? She did. That's why he wrote the letter. He was concerned that this lovely Christian woman, who had reared her family in a godly manner, didn't have the right limits on her love. That's why he wrote the letter. This letter could be stated in a few words: make sure your love has limits. That's the theme of 2 John. Hey, is that relevant? You hear much about love everywhere you turn, from every Christian or pseudo-Christian mouth that falls love, 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 until you wonder, where does it stop? I mean, if I'm to love everyone without discrimination, is that what God wants? Last week I overheard a young woman whose husband has gotten involved in Jehovah's Witness, and she says, you know, I'm really relieved. I mean, after all, they're witnesses about Jehovah. And she's thrilled. Broke my heart. She says, just open it up and let it go. Now, here was a woman in the first century who had a problem like you and I. Let me put it this way. Love is like a river that flows, and it's a thing of beauty. Creatures of nature find delight in floating on it and drawing water from it. Cities are built around it. But let that river leave its banks, and flood and destruction happens. People are driven from their homes. Disease is carried into the community. The river has to stay within its banks, or it becomes a thing of destruction. And the banks along the river of love are truth, get that, and discernment, get that. The standard of God's truth, the scriptures applied in discernment, or the river floods and destruction happens. Open your home and heart to every wind of doctrine and you're in for destruction, even though you may call it love. That's what she was doing. So he told her, stop it. Look at how he says it. Look at the introductory comments. Let's sort of investigate it. He says, I love you in the truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth. He writes it to her and her children. I think that is significant. Her children were walking in the truth. That's why he says in verse 4, I was very glad to find some of them walking in truth, just as we've received commandment to do from the Father. Isn't that encouraging when you hear that your children are behaving themselves? You know, you've raised them a certain way, and you get word from someone else, either a camp counselor or some teacher or prophet school or someone they stayed with through the summer. Hey, you know what? Your kids are turning out all right. You take a glycerin tablet to make sure that you really are able to cope with all of that. It's so amazing to you. And you say to yourself, wow, it's happening. Amazing. They're walking in the truth. Or someone says, you know, your children really have problems. It breaks your heart as a parent. Now, he wrote this woman and he says, your children walk in the truth. And that's thrilling to hear. I'm very glad, verse 4, to find some of them walking in that way, just as we have received commandment. Notice he is linking truth with love all through these remarks. In fact, truth appears 5 times in those 4 verses. Love without truth is dangerous. Every cult I've ever heard of promotes love. They envelop you with affection and support and preservation. Well, now he says, I ask you something, lady, verse 5. Read it like a postcard, just as you'd read a piece of mail that came in your box tomorrow. Now, I ask you, lady, not as writing to you a new commandment, but the one which we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love. Let me define that, says John, that we walk according to his commandments. His would mean Christ, of course, mentioned as the Son of the Father in verse 3. There are a number of things that Jesus Christ did and he said, and according to those truths, in keeping with the new covenant, the whole new way of life called grace, let's walk, let's love. Let it run free within those limitations, just as you have heard from the beginning that you should walk in it. Christians, I want to ask, for the sake of your investigation, how keen is your discernment? How careful are you to listen for the truth as set forth in Scripture, and how well do you stand? The woman had doubtless opened her home and heart to whomever. John heard of it, perhaps through the children, maybe through the sister, verse 13, maybe through her children, and in process of time, he wrote his friend, he said, say, your love needs to be brought into its proper boundaries, or it's not love at all. It's an indiscriminate gush of feeling.
You're listening to Insight for Living, and another message in Chuck Swindoll's study of brief New Testament letters. It's a 6-part series we're calling New Testament Postcards. To purchase the CDs or to download the complete sermons online, go to insightworld.org. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. At the beginning of today's program, Chuck described those classic moments in the Marine Corps when he received postcards and letters from home. We all know the feeling of getting correspondence from someone we love. Well, at the risk of overstating our friendship with you, there's nothing quite like getting your response in the mail, by phone, or online. Every single day of the year, this program is prepared and delivered with you in mind. And sending out these Bible studies every day can feel like a one-way form of communication, until, of course, you respond. We love hearing your comments. It's the high point of our day when a listener affirms the value of these efforts on your behalf. Maybe today's the day you'll take a few moments to jot us a note or go online to express your thanks. Your feedback means so much. And when you give a donation today, we'll say thank you by providing a book Chuck Swindoll selected called The Way of Lament. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org. And then let me add that we're especially grateful to a growing circle of friends who've come alongside Chuck and the team at Insight for Living. If you're a monthly companion, please accept our profound thanks. A monthly companion agrees to give a recurring donation every month, and signing up is quick and simple. At the beginning of the year, January is the perfect time to make this arrangement. You can have the satisfaction of knowing you're doing your part to make these programs possible. If you're listening in the United States, become a monthly companion by calling 1-800-772-8888. Otherwise, go to insight.org/monthly companion. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll highlights 2 John, a postcard to a lady and her kids. Listen Wednesday to Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Postcard to a Lady and Her Kids, was copyrighted in 1977, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.